from the Radio Ranch in the heart of Liberty, Texas. It's the Bombastic Blogcast for Monday, August 19th, 2024. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
You're yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, the kid with the patriotic red, white, and blue eyes, and one heck of a nice guy. Since it is Monday, let's do the Monday march back to work here. Get it over with. Straighten your backbone, hold your shoulders back, put a smile on your face, and keep a prayer on your lips, and everything will be just fine. All right, let's get things officially started with
the Daily Datagram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. This is a good one. It says, ink dries, paper burns, but what is written in the soul will last an eternity. I like that. This is assuming, of course, that you have a soul.
Don't go near it. We don't know where it's been.
Let's move along now to the so-called educational part of the Big Blogcast.
Twisted History.
Here we go.
Gather round, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
This is big.
Some cool, some not so cool.
Important.
Just the same. You need to know your Twisted History.
Yes, you do.
You might be quizzed.
There you go. And there you go. Once again, your daily dose of intimidation. And it's on with the show. All right, kids. The first flight of the B-25 Mitchell medium bomber took place on this day in 1940. And boy, that plane was put to good use during Jimmy Doolittle's raid on Tokyo, April 18th of 1942. We didn't do a whole lot of damage on that mission, but it was America's way of leaving our calling card in the wake of the raid on Pearl Harbor. Yeah. We got them good. And it was on this day in 1964, SINCOM 3, the first geostationary communication satellite, was launched. 2 months later, it would enable live coverage of the 1964 Summer Olympics and all the commercials necessary to pay for it.
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
If I were to attempt to point out a real difference, a good discernible difference between the people who were voting for Donald Trump in November and those who were voting against him, or not voting for him, I think that that difference is the people voting for Trump are pragmatists. They may not like Donald Trump any more than the people who are not voting for him, or the people who are voting against him, or the people who just aren't voting at all. But they understand that of the two candidates, Kamala Harris and Donald Trump, only one of them has the ability, has the understanding, has the influence to be able to turn this country back around again. He proved himself during the 3 years of his administration. I say 3 years because that last year was stolen from him and from us. Let's not be pretentious about this. Donald Trump's last year in the White House was stolen from us as well by, the likes of Anthony Fauci, the World Health Organization, this scare about COVID-19, and now they're trying to ramp up another scare. By the way, it'll fail. Don't lose any sleep over this. This Mpox thing, World Health Organization is going to try to mobilize a worldwide lockdown again. Well, Mpox is bullcorn. You know, it's just not going to gain any legs. But I think when it comes to this pollster, this anti-Trump pollster, you probably know him, may remember him from his days on the Fox News Channel. He doesn't show up there anymore. Frank Luntz, big pollster. Now, I couldn't tell you a whole lot about his track record, whether he's good, bad, or indifferent. I just know that Frank Luntz is pretty influential when it comes to news organizations, and you see him quite regularly on CNN, and he took a lot of people by surprise, particularly a recent panel on CNN, because Luntz has often been seen as an adversary to Trump, and he stunned the panel the other day when he pushed back against what he perceived as a biased narrative against Trump. The interaction happened during a discussion about the upcoming election, with the panel largely predicting a bleak outcome for Trump's chances. So here we go. My argument about pragmatism. Because most of your mainstream media, if not all of your mainstream media, so badly wants Donald Trump to lose. They so badly want the Democrats in office, they don't care who the candidate is, really. You've seen the whitewash job the mainstream media has carried out already. I mean, it's, you know, they used to criticize Kamala Harris. Now, oh gosh, she can do no wrong. So this points out again how the mainstream media is not in the news business. They're in the lying business. They're in the propaganda business. Dr. Joseph Goebbels would be so proud of the mainstream media here in America. Oh, I guarantee if the Nazis in Germany were on the rise in our time, if they were on the rise today, our mainstream media would be expressing all the sympathy in the world for the Nazi Party. That is how bad our mainstream media has become. The media in this country originally was supposed to be the gatekeeper, you know, pointing out where our country is going wrong, where our government is going wrong, pointing out cases of corruption. Well, now they harbor corruption. But then what do you expect when virtually all of your news media in this country is controlled by one of six companies? So getting back to Luntz, he was quick to challenge this outlook about a bleak outcome for Trump's chances. And he pointed out that the same narrative was prevalent in 2016. And he argued that the media, including networks like CNN, had a track record of underestimating Trump's appeal and resilience among his base. And if anything, Trump's base has gotten stronger. In fact, really, since we're talking about pragmatism here, if you want to be real, Joe Biden was the best salesman for Donald Trump over the last 3.5 years. So anyhow, Luntz emphasized that despite the ongoing legal challenges and the media scrutiny, Trump's support among key voter demographics remains very strong and could prove decisive in the 2024 race. The honeymoon with Kamala Harris isn't over yet. It's starting to fade, but it's not over yet. It will be over, and when it is, Katie bar the door. Now, Luntz's comments took the panelists aback, obviously, particularly because Luntz hasn't shied away from criticizing Trump in the past. You know, his unexpected defense of Trump's political viability basically pointed out a significant disconnect between the media's portrayal of Donald Trump and the reality on the ground, where Trump's influence continues to loom large over the Republican Party. Make no mistake about it, Trump is the leader of the Republican Party. And he's not going to let go. Nor should he. So Luntz pointed out that the polling data doesn't fully capture the intensity of Trump's support. Bingo! He warned that dismissing Trump's chances could lead to a repeat of 2016, where pundits and pollsters were left scrambling to explain how they missed the signs of Trump's impending victory. So Luntz's analysis underscores the importance of looking beyond surface-level polling and media narratives to understand the dynamics at play in the 2024 election. You know what's going to happen? Is round about Monday, November 4th, a lot of people in this country are going to start panicking. And they're going to understand the reality that Kamala Harris could win. And these people are going to turn out and vote for Donald Trump. Not because they love Donald Trump. Not because they like his ad-lib speeches. You know, his prepared speeches are always great. They really are. But his ad-lib speeches, oh my God, for me, they're like nails down a chalkboard. I hate to say that. But I get a kick out of his sense of humor. I really do. But, you know, his constant use of the like you've never seen before or the greatest ever, you know, he's just his reliance on superlatives has gotten so redundant, I find it very tiring. And yes, I'm voting for Trump. Now, as the conversation continued during CNN, Luntz criticized the media's role in shaping public perception. And that's really not the job, I would argue. And I could probably lose an argument in this regard. I would argue that that's not the mainstream media's job to shape public opinion. But to a degree, yeah, I suppose so. But anyhow, once criticized their role in shaping public perception, arguing that networks like CNN contribute to a biased portrayal of Trump and his supporters. And he suggested that this bias not only alienates a significant portion of the electorate, but also contributes to the polarization and distrust in mainstream media. I mean, right now, only, 20% or just a little over 20% of Americans believe or hold any credibility with the mainstream media. I'm sorry. The media holds credibility with only about a little over 20% of Americans. And that number may be down because I'm quoting a figure that I read about, almost a year ago. So Luntz's remarks reflect a growing sentiment among conservatives who believe that the media has become increasingly partisan. And very often that is at the expense of fair and balanced coverage, because the coverage is not fair, it is not balanced. When it comes to watching networks like CNN, MSNBC, NBC, ABC, CBS, you may as well be watching The View. And moreover, Luntz highlighted on this appearance that we're talking about here on CNN, he highlighted the potential for a significant voter turnout among groups that have traditionally supported Trump, including rural voters and those without a college degree. And he noted that these voters feel increasingly marginalized by the political establishment and media because they go hand in hand, making them more likely to rally behind a candidate who they see as an outsider willing to challenge the status quo. So Luntz's comments serve as a stark reminder of the unpredictability of American politics. I mean, I'm still waiting for that October surprise, but we have to wait for October to get here, right? When you talk about the unpredictability of American politics, particularly, it's particularly in an era where traditional polling and media analysis often fail to capture the full picture. I mean, look what happened in 2016. The poll said one thing, Donald Trump won. So Luntz's willingness to speak out against the prevailing narrative on the network that's been critical of Trump, which network hasn't been, though? Really, this whole episode here underscores the complexities of this election. And, well, I can't take away the enduring influence of Trump either. I mean, the man is influential. How do you think a man like Donald Trump became a man like Donald Trump? It didn't happen by being an idiot. Going to the New York Post for this story. As you know, the DNC convention starts today, and attendees in Chicago are going to have the opportunity to get a free abortion or vasectomy just blocks away from the event. And vasectomy appointments are filling up pretty fast from what we understand. Planned Parenthood Great Rivers, which serves most of Missouri and part of Southern Illinois, is sending a mobile health center to the Windy City's West Loop area to offer reproductive services today and tomorrow. Now, medication abortions are reportedly available on both days, with vasectomies being exclusively offered today. And that's according to the New York Times. Although the story I'm bringing to you right here is from the New York Post, because I trust them. Anyhow, vasectomies are reportedly in high demand, and there's already a waiting list. Dr. Colleen McNicholas, the chief medical officer of Planned Parenthood Great Rivers, said, "There are going to be people traveling to Chicago from all over the country, and I think we should be doing what we can as health care providers to show what the impact of good policy and bad policy is." See, here you go. You have a doctor who is also a political activist. You know, whenever you see these Planned Parenthood gatherings, they keep talking about health care for women. Well, it's not health care for the fetus. It's not health care for that unborn child. I find it so frightening, too, because our culture has changed so much in the last 50 years. I remember a song that the duo Seals and Crofts, you remember them? Big hits like Diamond Girl. Well, they had a song, their last big single, and I don't know if it was all that big, but their last single, in fact, it may have triggered the end of their career, was a song called Unborn Child, and it was an anti-abortion song. It was a bit controversial, but in those days, it was very well received. Today, you know, the people on the left are advocating killing a child right after it's born. All right, so these so-called medical services are going to be provided on a sliding fee scale. You pay what you can and get the health care you need is what they're saying. And this is according to the appointment reservation form. Pay what you can, get the health care you need, which only requires a name, date of birth, and basic contact information. Now, our presidential candidate on the left, Kamala Harris, who's going to be nominated, has been outspoken in her support for abortion rights after the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. And again, let me remind you, all that did was it shot the issue back to the states. So, but under Roe v. Wade, that was a federally protected abortion program. Federally protected. You could get an abortion anywhere. That went on for 50 years. It's no longer the case. Now, naturally, particularly for the left, abortion's become one of the integral parts of Harris's campaign. Because you've got several states now that have passed their own strict abortion bans since the Supreme Court's decision, which is now 2 years old. And Harris has called abortion one of America's fundamental freedoms. My God, if I were an unborn child, you know, it's just, it's frightening. But she calls it one of America's fundamental freedoms. And that's according to a White House release announcing her fight for reproductive freedoms in that's the program. That's the name of the program, Fight for Reproductive Freedoms, back in December. Now, unlike previous years, abortion's expected to be a front and center issue for Democrats, anyhow, at the convention. But here again, I don't believe that abortion, the issue of abortion, is that big a deal yet. Certainly not in these times. There are far more important issues. There's the alliance between Russia, China, and North Korea. We need to be concerned about that. There's the intention of China invading Taiwan. They're going to do it. I guarantee it'll happen a lot sooner if Kamala Harris wins this election. And we won't do anything about it. We'll just let it happen. I mean, there are a lot of things to be considered here in this election, not a one of which is abortion. But it's a big deal for the people on the left, which is another indication of why you shouldn't vote for lefties. Their priorities are all effed up. Senator Tina Smith, who's a Democrat out of Minnesota, and those are some of the worst Democrats, they even put California Democrats to shame. She previously worked for Planned Parenthood, and she says there's a direct through line between what Donald Trump did and loss of access to abortion care. Trump didn't have anything to do with that. That wasn't his deal. And then she says that's one of the reasons why people are seeing this in a kind of completely different frame than they were even just 4 years ago. Well, in addition to the mobile clinic, let's get back to that. There's another group, Americans for Contraception, that plans to erect an 18-foot-tall inflatable intrauterine device, or IUD. And they named it Frida Womb. Frida Womb. Wow. That's another thing you can always expect from the left. They're totally tasteless. So as you're hearing this blogcast, that inflatable IUD is already there. It's up. And other activists are planning a Hotties for Harris party, in addition to a number of other events. And meanwhile, businesses in downtown Chicago have started boarding up their doors and windows in anticipation of thousands of anti-Israeli protesters that had planned to take over the city streets during the convention. Again, this activism against Israel is being funded by organizations like CARE, you know, the Council on American or Council on Arab. Oh, golly, I'm trying to remember. CARE, C-A-I-R. Council on Arab Islamic Relations. Oh, Council on. Okay. It's thank you. Council on American Islamic Relations. All right. So that's an organization that I'm very leery of, but they are behind you. Excuse me. You can bet that they're behind a lot of this political activism against Israel. And there's going to be more of it because our borders have been open for how long now? 3.5 years, wide open, with millions between an estimated between 8 and 12 million people having gotten into the country. And of those, a great majority of them have come in undetected. We have no earthly idea where they're from or what their intentions are. Just keep that in the back of your mind before you vote. Tim Walz, y'all know who he is now, right? Vice presidential nominee for the Democrat Party in November. You don't need to introduce him anymore as Minnesota governor. We all know that about him. But he has committed to participating in a debate scheduled for October 1st by CBS. They're going to host it. It's going to take place in New York City, and it would be the first vice presidential face-off of this election cycle. But there's still some degree of uncertainty remaining because J.D. Vance has yet to fully confirm his attendance. But if I were a betting man, I'd say that Vance will be there. Now, Walz announced his decision on social media, saying, "See you on October 1st, J.D., in response to the CBS News invitation." See, so the first one to commit to this appearance was Walz because CBS is left wing. Walz is left wing. So that's just a natural fit. So then what they're going to do is they're going to try to posture this to make it look like J.D. Vance is apprehensive about participating. That's the way they play this game. CBS extends the invitation. Walz says, yeah. They haven't approached J.D. Vance yet. They may have by now as you're hearing this blogcast. But as this is all being put into play, they hadn't yet asked J.D. Vance, so at least they can point at J.D. Vance and say, see, he still hasn't committed. It's the typical left-wing BS. That's all it is. Just BS. So, the network, CBS, has proposed 4 potential dates for the debate, September 17th, September 24th, October 1st, and October 8th. Walz's campaign agreed to the October 1st date. So that sets the stage for a potentially pivotal moment in the election. Potentially. That's an overused word at times like this. You know, you're going into it, potentially, has the potential for. Anyhow, Vance, as I just mentioned, hasn't yet confirmed, but he expressed a strong likelihood of attending. He mentioned that he needs to review the moderators. Good boy. He's going to discuss the rules before making a final decision. He told Fox News' Laura Ingraham that he strongly believes he'll be there, but emphasized the importance of vetting the debate's conditions. And that's an important point to make, believe me. This hesitation leaves the possibility of the debate hanging in the balance. Now, the decision to participate in a vice presidential debate comes during a, gosh, here's an understatement for you, turbulent election cycle. You know, earlier this year, the political landscape was altered with the resignation. It wasn't a resignation. A resignation from the campaign by Joe Biden. So that just flipped everything on its head. But, you know, here again, You didn't have to be a political science major to understand that in all probability, Joe Biden was not going to be on the ticket in November. I mean, clearly, we've watched this man's mind deteriorate day by day ever since January 20th of 2021. Now, to be honest, you know, I was talking about pragmatism earlier. If we're going to be pragmatic, we have to understand that the stakes for the October 1st debate are high, especially given the unprecedented nature of this election. Here again, and the people on the left don't care about this, but here again, you have a presidential candidate in Kamala Harris who never won a primary, was never voted for in this entire makeup. She's just been installed in a Soviet-style installation. I know that sounds redundant. She's been installed in a Soviet-style installation, but that's exactly what happened. So Walz has been busy campaigning solo since his nomination because Kamala hasn't got the balls to appear. You got Walz eager to take on Vance. I would caution Walz not to be overly confident because J.D. Vance is smart enough to rip you to shreds. And Walz has been focusing on a message of joy and positivity while also strongly promoting a pro-union agenda. And in contrast, Vance has been more combative, particularly in his criticisms of Harris. J.D.'s attacked Harris's stance on immigration and accused her of avoiding the media. And this, of course, signals that immigration could be a focal point of the upcoming debate. It would be criminal if it wasn't. So, both candidates have expressed a very strong desire to face up against each other, but the exact timing and format are still up in the air. So, we'll see what happens. To the Comedy Corner with Paul Snyder.
Now, if you don't mind, also give me a round of applause, because I am a huge introvert, and I left the house for this today, so... Thank you. I did my Wordle, and then I came on in. So, yes. The introverts, they are my people. Sometimes I'll even ask by round of applause, you know, where the other introverts are in the room. And that got it. Nailed it. Just a one solitary clap. That was it. And they are probably heading home right now. Just, I overdid it. That was exhausting. I shouldn't have done that. I know. My people aren't going to applaud. I know this. They might give me like half a head nod, and then we're going to look right back at our shoes where it's safe. That is what my people do. But I feel like as an introvert and a comic, I have the pleasure of sharing with the extroverts what the introverts have been talking about, you know? Talking's kind of a strong word, I think, but I mean, we have a group text, all right? That's what we have. But here's just something that I feel like I'd like to share with you guys that most introverts can agree with, and that is that we miss COVID, you guys. Was the golden age of being, that was our Normandy, you guys. That we stormed that beach and then we went home for 3 years. And we would do it again. Absolutely, we would. Now, one thing as an introvert, I will tell you this, I try to treat everybody the way I want to be treated. You know, it's the golden rule. That wasn't the punchline yet, but we'll get to it. It doesn't even matter to me if you are the CEO of a Fortune 500 company or just a homeless person on the side of the road, you know? I am not going to talk to either of you. That is probably should have led with that, actually. I really tried to spin that into a noble cause, but that didn't work. I think as an introvert, I'm pretty comfortable with most things about it. But there's one thing I do not like, and that is confrontation. I avoid confrontation at all costs. You know, if there is somebody mad at me or who does not like me at work, I would rather go find a new job than ever have a conversation about it. I would. I'll be at the next job interview, and they'll ask me why I left that last job. And I'll just be like, well, I accidentally reheated salmon in the microwave. And
make it a marvelous Monday. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's Bombastic Blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.